Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fireproof by Delancey Stewart. Narrated by Aaron Shedlock and Desiree Ketchum. 1. Mason. Colberry, Vermont.
So you've used one of these before, right?
My new boss, a lively, dark-haired woman named Zara, was eyeing me skeptically from behind a coffee machine that looked more convoluted than the new milkers I'd brought in for my goats. I hadn't, but I might have suggested that I had during this short interview process where Zara and her co-owner Audrey gave me the impression that they were desperate enough to hire just about anyone with a heartbeat and half a brain, so long as he was willing to learn. Technically, no, I said. I hadn't straight-out lied about it before, and I wouldn't do it now. But I pulled a few shifts helping out back in the service. Zara turned to face me fully, crossing her arms over her chest and giving me a grin.
Did they have a temperamental Astra in the coffee mess when you were a Marine, Mason?
She patted the complicated-looking machine that occupied much of the front counter. I took a quick look around the interior of the busy bean, the place I'd hoped to begin some secondary employment today in order to bring in a bit of the money that the farm wasn't currently making. And then I realized I really needed to show Zara why I'd be an asset here, whether I'd made fancy coffee before or not. I needed a flexible side job, one that would still let me take care of things at the farm, and the hours here worked well. No, I said slowly, making a point to relax my hands and shoulders. I had a tendency to clench them, and I knew it added to what my sister called my resting murder face, which apparently held fast to my expression about 96% of the time and freaked people out. I blew out of breath, forcing myself to relax. But I'm a quick learner, Zara, and I hope you'll give me a chance.
Relax, Mason. Having you here, even if it's just another body to run plates out front, is great. We're desperate.
She grinned at me, and I did relax a bit.
When we first interviewed, you said something about improving efficiencies. Audrey and I both think we could use some of that military efficiency around here. Got anything in mind? I mean, I know it's your first day.
I nodded. It was early, and the smell of coffee and baked goods was beginning to warm the air. The sky outside the plate glass windows grew brighter, and I knew we didn't have a ton of time before the bean opened for the day. I hoped to still be here by then.
Let's hear it, Zara said, and she stood just a hair taller, as if she was bracing herself for an assault.
I could be intense, I knew that, and I forced my posture to remain relaxed, tried to keep my voice light. Just a couple. For one thing, the menu board.
Be careful now. That's Kieran's baby. He doesn't work here anymore, but he still likes to come in and beautify the board. That one's his.
She was looking at the huge sunflower that was admittedly beautiful, but that dominated the board to the point that the menu was an afterthought. I smiled, holding my hands up in front of me, palms facing her. It looks great, I said. But it's not about looks. There's a lot of stuff up there, and some really loopy writing that takes a few minutes to figure out. The menu board was a dense swirl of color, the actual offerings of the busy bean competing for space around the yard. Zara continued to stare over her shoulder at the board. If you simplified the board, customers could figure out what they want a little faster. It might not seem like a lot, but when the line is to the door, seconds count. She raised one shoulder, as if suggesting I go on. You might also get a hot water tap up here next to the sink. Getting hot water from the espresso machine for non-espresso drinks forces everyone to wait for the pressure and steam to rebuild here. I indicated the spout of the machine. And time is money for a little shop like this, right? Her eyes had gone a tiny bit wider.
Right, she said slowly,
glancing at the machine as if it had said something in response.
So you do know a bit about this machine?
I did some reading. She nodded, looking wary, and I knew I had to be careful. This place was Zara's baby, and Audrey's, but I could help here, and I didn't think making coffee would be that hard to learn. I've got one more suggestion, I said, and she looked up at me now, a smile lifting one side of her mouth.
Why do I get the feeling you've got a lot more than that? She asked.
A low chuckle escaped me. She was right, but just because routine and efficiency were the things that kept me sane didn't mean everyone wanted to hear about them. I'll just give you one for now, I said.
Hit me.
You have a lot of regulars. They shouldn't have to wait in line if you already know what they want. She nodded.
We've talked about that, but part of what people come in here for is the personal attention, the banter at the counter, the atmosphere. No reason they can't get all that while picking up their drinks at the far end of the counter. You could have them prepay if you wanted to, or put in a text ordering system, or both. Her nose wrinkled.
It's just a lot of logistics, she said. I'm not sure we're ready to invest in stuff like that.
I nodded. Maybe they weren't, but it didn't have to be complicated.
I get it, I said.
But it could be as simple as keeping a tablet there with the shop's quick order email account pulled up. Folks can email before they leave the house or from their cars.
So you're going to manage the line and check email when we're slammed?
I'd come in lots of times before starting today, watch the way things operated behind the counter when they were busy and when they weren't. When you've got two people up here anyway, one of them can be designated to check. Keep notifications on the device, and there's an audio cue that an order has come in. Zara didn't look sold. She glanced up at the clock and then out the door.
I like you, Mason, she said. Even if you do look like you kind of want to kill me sometimes.
I assure you, I don't, she laughed.
I know, but Amelia told me to give you shit about your resting murder face.
Amelia. Of course, my sister would have been in here talking about me. It was like we were two halves of one personality. She got all the bright, shiny social genes, and I ended up with the logic, practicality, and focus. Not that she was flighty or ditzy. She wasn't. But sometimes she seemed to overlook reality in favor of maintaining an upbeat outlook. I was a little more realistic. Of course she did.
Anyway, let me show you how this bad boy works, and this morning, we'll just have you pulling espressos, okay? Nothing fancy. Master the shots, and we'll move on.
I gave her a single nod. A plan. Good. As Zara went through the steps of making a simple espresso, I noted them all, both in my mind and in the book I kept shoved in my pocket.
You're not going to have time to refer to your notes,
Zara said, glancing over her shoulder as I made notes. Won't need to. Writing them down solidifies them in my mind. She didn't say anything else for a few minutes, and we went on. By the time she was ready to open the doors, I could make a shot perfectly, and with precision.
I'll show you how to steam the milk when the early rush ends, she said, smiling at me with a bit more confidence now that she'd seen I wasn't going to completely flub the basics.
As we served the first few customers, Zara introducing me brightly to each one as the new barista, I fell into an easy rhythm that relaxed me. Every other thing in my life might have been hanging by an uncertain thread. The farm, my uncle, my mental state. But the efficiency and routine involved in making shot after shot of espresso felt like certainty. This made sense. At least until Zara shot me a strange smile and said,
You know, Mason, every barista we've hired so far has fallen in love and left us. You planning to do the same?
There's not a chance in hell, Zara. I'd already figured out that my life worked best alone, and I had no plans to change that.
2. Heather. Washington, D.C. I could tell by the way the building across from mine was turning a deep gray orange that it was well past time to leave the office, but I felt anchored to my desk, reliant on its solidity. My desk, I knew, had very few surprises for me, and I wasn't sure I could handle one more surprise.
Hey!
Morgan stepped into my office. He was technically my boss, a tall man with red hair and broad shoulders. He was also a friend. I'd had dinner at his house, sipped wine with him and his partner Sam more times than I could count.
You ready to go?
Morgan had taken to checking on me at the end of the day, making sure I had someone to walk out with. I appreciated it, but wished I didn't need it. I'd been a steady, solid career lobbyist at one point, fighting for the right to education for kids who couldn't fight for themselves. Now I required babysitting, evidently. Yeah, I stood, leaning down to retrieve my purse from the bottom drawer of my desk. My legs ached from sitting too long, and my body felt worn out, pulled too thin. Let's go. Morgan was watching me, a look on his face like the one he got when we were reading a brief about something particularly distressing happening in the school system. His pity face. Stop looking at me like that, I snapped at him.
Heather,
he said, his voice kind.
It's wearing on you. I can see it.
It's over now, so... The trial. My testimony. The verdict. It was all over. So my life was supposed to be getting better now. The stress of testifying against the popular senator who'd been my biggest champion at one time should have been dissipating. Things should have been calming down.
But it's not. You're not sleeping,
Morgan said, clearly referring to the dark circles I'd tried to cover with concealer.
You've lost weight.
My clothes did seem to be hanging in a way they hadn't before.
And you've got this look in your eye like a koala that just fell out of its tree.
I stopped in the doorway at his side, frowning at him.
Really?
Is that a look you're pretty familiar with? He smiled in the easy way he had, lifting one shoulder and bumping me with the other.
I can imagine it, he said. That poor little fat bear bouncing a couple times on the hard ground and then having to look up at the branches of that towering eucalyptus like, oh shit, I have to climb that fucker again?
Despite the ache in my bones and my mind, I laughed. I guess I feel that way a little bit, yeah.
How many emails did you get today?
He asked, glancing at me sideways as we made our way to the front of the office, switching off lights as we went. He wasn't asking about typical work-related emails. I got a lot of those. He meant the nasty, hate-filled emails I'd been receiving ever since I'd agreed to testify against the senator about what I'd seen when I'd worked late one night with a group of others at his office. Basically, him with a staffer who was definitely not his wife. I would never have even mentioned the indiscretion. Men cheated. I'd learned that lesson a couple times in my life. My parents, my high school and college boyfriends. But then the news hit about similar indiscretions this particular senator had made with several women, some of them underage. Because he was a supporter of education reform, the allegations against him were particularly unsettling. As he was my best ally in the Senate, the case was devastating to me personally. And since I mentioned to Morgan what I'd seen, he pushed me to testify. It had been the right thing to do, but my life was a disaster as a result. Seven, I said, sighing. Only one of them mentioned dismembering me in my sleep, and there were only two that suggested I was just a jealous slut. We chuckled humorlessly about the emails, texts, and snail mail I received regularly now. I had known the senator was popular. He had a huge base of loyal supporters who were sure he could do no wrong, and his conviction had enraged them. Their anger had been pointed at those who'd helped to secure the verdict since the trial began.
Texts?
Four.
You changed your number, right?
Didn't matter. I had changed my number. The people who desperately wanted to reach me, to put me in my place, to frighten and harass me, had somehow found the new one quickly. Morgan walked me down the steps of our building and out onto the darkening street. Without me asking, he took my arm and turned me toward my apartment building. You live the other way, I reminded him, wondering if maybe tonight he'd get sick of babysitting and just send me home. I didn't want him to, and I hated how scared I was.
I like a walk after work,
he said lightly.
And making Sam wait for me is a good thing. I don't want him to think I'm too whipped.
You're completely whipped, I elbowed him as we walked.
Just don't tell him that. A man likes a challenge.
I smiled up at my friend, thankful for his constant presence and good humor. I needed both lately.
Here we are, my lady.
Morgan made a silly bow as we came to a stop in front of my building, and his phone began jangling in his pocket. He glanced at it.
Oh, no.
What? I faced him.
Maybe tonight was the wrong night to make Sam wait. We have reservations. Gotta run.
He kissed me on the cheek and then turned, hurrying down the street. Thanks, Morgan, I called, fishing my keys out of my pocket.
Get some sleep, Heather.
His voice came back to me as he turned the corner. I nodded and turned toward the doors, where I found I was tired enough to spend a whole minute trying the wrong key. Shit, I whispered to myself, pulling the right one from the ring and trying again.
You shameful little slut.
A deep, gravelly voice hit me from just over my right shoulder. I spun to find a man standing there, scowling at me, his eyes burning with hatred. I didn't say anything back, This wasn't the first time I'd been confronted on the street. I hastened to get the key working in the lock, glancing around for Morgan, who was long gone.
"You think you can bring down a good man like Senator Andrews and get away with it?"
Shit, shit, shit. My hands were shaking so intensely I couldn't make the key fit. Sweat trickled down my back beneath my light shell.
"It's people like you,"
the man went on, his tone scathing,
"who dig everything this country stands for and shit all over it. Who find a good, God-fearing man like the senator and do everything you can to sully his good name, to bring him down to your level."
My insides had clenched so tightly I felt like adrenaline was literally shooting out of my fingertips as I fumbled the keys and watched with horror as they fell to the concrete in front of me.
"You should be careful, you little whore,"
the man said, leaning in so close to me I could feel the spittle hitting my shoulder as I bent down to retrieve my keys. I cast a wild glance around the street again, but there was no help in sight. I was alone. It was almost dark, and this man was so close to me I could feel the heat of his breath on my cheek.
"Someone might just get it into their head to take out the trash," he said.
I made the mistake of looking up at him. This well-dressed man who was probably someone's husband, someone's father. He looked like any other businessman you might see on the streets of D.C., only this man was clearly insane, or at least enraged, at me, because I testified against someone he believed was above reproach. This was what you got for doing the right thing. I was shaking violently now, and the man continued speaking as I finally fit the key into the lock.
"I know where you live, and I know which apartment is yours, Heather Brigham. I know what you do every second of your day. And if you're not careful, I might just make sure you never have the chance to threaten this great democracy again. It's people like you, women like you, who pose a threat to everything this country stands for."
The key turned and I pushed the door open, feeling like I might scream or pass out or die at any second if I didn't get away from this guy.
"Watch your back,"
he shouted as I forced the door shut, staring at him through the glass as I backed away. Thank God he hadn't tried to push in behind me. Thank God for the insubstantial door separating him from the small lobby of my building. I gasped for breath as I jabbed at the elevator button, but the doors didn't open, and the man was slapping the glass now, still shouting about how they were coming for me, how I'd pay. A noise filled my head, a rushing of air and terror that almost drowned the man out, but only served to spike my panic. I flung open the door to the stairwell and ran up, taking the steps as fast as I possibly could, passing landing after landing. As I rounded the landing for the 9th floor, nearly at my own apartment's level, my toe caught the edge of a step and I went sprawling. It didn't hurt as I crashed into the stairs ahead of me, my chin hitting one as another sharp edge caught my shoulder. I felt the pressure, the hardness of the stairs, but no pain, even as the force of the fall sent my bag shuttling down the steps beneath me, lipstick, mace, and my phone scattering. I should have hit him with the mace, but I'd been too terrified to even reach for it. For a moment, I couldn't move, my breathing coming in short gasps from the exertion and the panic coursing through me. This was why I couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. How could I live a normal life when every regular-looking businessman out on the street was making death threats against me? How could I go on doing the right thing, fighting for the rights of those less able to fight, when I couldn't even make it through the day without worrying I was being followed, stalked? I rolled to sit up and noticed then that I was crying, that my shoulder throbbed and that there was blood on my silk shell, dribbling down from my mouth. Slowly, I managed to gather my things back into my bag, and I practically crawled up the last set of stairs, utterly drained now. I made it to my door, deadbolted myself inside the apartment, and went to the bathroom to see where the blood was coming from. There was a gash on my chin. The woman in the mirror stared back at me, smeared with blood and makeup, her eyes haunted and round. I couldn't go on like this. I knew it. But what choice did I have? This was my life. I needed to find a way to take control of it again. After a long, hot shower, I was able to think a little more clearly. I just need to be more careful. Vary my routine. Maybe move? I was an adult. I could handle this. Eventually, the frenzy would die down and the crazy Andrew supporters would crawl back into their self-righteous holes. Because this couldn't go on. It just couldn't. They'd get bored, I told myself. Find another target. A new scandal would pop up to distract the terrifying people who seemed so dedicated to terrifying me. It was getting late, and my pulse was still pounding in my head, even after the pain reliever I'd taken. Only now my stomach had begun to churn, thanks to the fact I hadn't eaten much. I went to the kitchen in my small one-bedroom apartment, pulling open the fridge to find something to eat. I just settled on the couch with a yogurt when my phone began to vibrate on the coffee table in front of me. My heart spiked immediately as my fear from before made an encore appearance, but a quick glance at my phone had me grabbing for it, hoping I could answer before I missed the call. Kev? I rarely got to speak to my brother. He'd been deployed for the last 6 months and had only called me once in all that time despite me making sure he had my number every time I changed it.
Hey, you.
His confident, familiar voice rumbled through the phone, and my heart settled in my chest. How are you? It's so good to hear your voice.
I'm good, sis. Nothing to complain about.
Where are you? I hesitated to even ask. Half the time he ignored the question, and the other half I asked until he was forced to remind me that he couldn't tell me that. Kevin was a Special Operations Marine, a raider, and the missions he served for our country weren't generally the ones I heard about on the news.
You're waiting for me to say I can't tell you, right?
I sighed. I'm used to it.
What if I said Virginia?
The state? The state of Virginia? I sat up straighter. I hadn't seen Kevin in over a year. Could he really be just a few miles from D.C.?
No, the planet,
he laughed, and that comforting big brother tone was there, twining itself through my worry and doubt, reminding me that I wasn't alone. Not entirely.
Yeah, the state. I was at Quantico for a few days, and I have some leave on the tail end. Thought I'd come say hi if you got time.
Yes! The word was out, breathy and almost panicked, before I'd even planned to say it.
Okay, good,
he said.
I was thinking I'd drive in tomorrow morning. That work?
It did. That would work. Or... Kev? I ventured, my voice sounding small and timid. Could you maybe come tonight? He was quiet a moment, and I knew there was no way he hadn't absorbed the change in my voice, the fear in the question.
I'm on my way, he said. I can be there in an hour. Good?
Relief worked through my shoulders, loosened my spine. Yeah.
Sit tight,
he said, clearly understanding that there was something going on, something to be dealt with, that once again his sister needed some kind of saving. I hung up, a combination of relief and shame pressing me into the cushions of the couch. I didn't want to need my brother here, but I knew that having him with me might allow me to get a good night's sleep, and it would be the first in a while. I didn't have to tell him everything, I told myself, but Kevin had a way of getting things out of me, and I'd never been a good actress. Kevin was too used to my needing rescue, and he was too well suited for the role of rescuer. Some things never changed. An hour later, Kevin called.
I'm parking. I'll buzz up in 5.
I was relieved he hadn't just buzzed. The sound probably would have given me a heart attack after everything else I'd been through that day. That month. When the knock came at the door, I flew across the living room to pull it open. And seeing my brother standing there in front of me, a hat pulled low over his dark hair, the square jaw and wide grin, made me feel like maybe everything really would be okay. Kevin let his bag fall to the floor inside the door and swept me up into a huge bear hug. It was so familiar, so comforting, and it had been so long since I'd felt truly safe that the tears were running down my cheeks before I could stop them. He set me down, his hands remaining on my shoulders as he frowned down at me, undoubtedly seeing the gash on my chin, the dark circles under my eyes. And as I often did when my hero brother was around, I felt small, weak. "Hey," he said tenderly. I wiped at my face and spun away from him. "I have beer. You want a beer?"
"Yeah, I do,"
he said, following me to the kitchen.
"And then I want you to tell me what's going on."
I sighed, my mind racing as I pulled the lid from the bottle and turned to hand it to him. I wanted to edit the tale, to tell him enough to make him understand why I just burst into tears, but maybe not enough to make him really worry or feel like this was another problem he had to solve. We sat on the couch facing one another. "It's so good to see you," I told him honestly. On top of everything else I'd been worrying about, there was always Kevin in the back of my mind. I never knew what kind of danger he might be in, if this might be the mission he'd never return from. He was all I had, and I couldn't imagine him not coming back. "I missed you." He shrugged and gave me a cocky grin.
"I'm good. I'm always good."
He took a long swallow of the beer and then set it down on the coffee table, fixing me in his intense, blue-eyed gaze.
"Now tell me what's going on. I'm guessing I'm about to find out why the hell you've changed your number twice in the last 3 months."
So I did. I told him everything, the words rushing out without me giving too much thought to how they should be formed or molded for his consideration. I told him about the senator, about the trial, about the phone calls and emails, the text messages, and the harassment outside my office. Lastly, I told him about the man who'd waited for me outside my home that night. Kevin's face remained almost expressionless, but I knew him well enough to know that the tightening around his eyes and the tiny flare of his nostrils meant there was a fire about to ignite inside him. He said nothing when I finished talking, but I watched him clench his jaw and then blow out a long breath. He finished the rest of his beer and put the empty bottle carefully down on the coffee table. And then he did what he always did, what I'd probably known he was going to do. He told me how he was going to save me.
"Pack a bag."
I shook my head. I hadn't expected that his version of saving me meant running away. I couldn't do that. What?
"Let work know you're taking some time. The only way to keep you safe is to get out of D.C. until this dies."
He had his phone out, was already scrolling. Where would I go, Kevin? I don't want to leave. That part was mostly a lie. It was more that I had nowhere else to go and plenty of work keeping me here.
"I'll handle that. Just pack. Bring a couple sweaters, maybe a coat."
It was mid-June. Where exactly was he planning to take me? Antarctica? Kevin. I stood and stepped in front of him, made him look up at me. Where are we going?
Vermont.
3. Mason. I can't believe you're working at the Busy Bean. My sister was gleeful as she sat across from me at the Colberry Diner. Her smile was wide, and not for the first time. I envied her easy way of being in the world around her. Comfortable, happy. Don't you have to, like, talk to people there? She was giving me shit, as she usually did, about being a hermit. For the record, I was hardly a hermit. I spent less time in my house than I wanted to, especially now that I was working in 3 shifts a week at the coffee shop in Colberry. "Yes, I talk to people," I snapped. "I'm not a complete misfit, you know. I can be personable." She fixed me with a level gaze and said in a flat voice, "Right. Just eat," I suggested. This was our once-monthly brother-sister dinner out, and while I pretended that having my little sister bust my balls was annoying, it was actually the one thing that felt right in the world. She'd been driving me nuts since we'd been kids, and being with Amelia, even if it was just this one dinner each month, helped me remember that life wasn't just about work.
How's the greenhouse? She asked. You're still going to build one at the school, right?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?